You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
What's good, goat flippers? It's your host, Flurk, here, and thank you for tuning into this episode of the podcast. If this is your first time here, we welcome you to the Van Flip, where we're not your typical Q&A podcast. If you are listening to us on a platform, you can give us a rating. Just go ahead and give us a 5-star thumbs up or whatever the highest thing is you can. It definitely helps us out in the algorithm of the podcast world. Visit lambgoat.com to stay up to date on news, releases, and announcements from around the hardcore and metal world. Follow Lambgoat on social media. Give us a like on Facebook and follow Lambgoat on both Twitter and Instagram at Lambgoat. Ooh, also big announcement here. We finally started a Twitter account to better interact with all of you all directly. Go follow at VanFlip Podcast. Tweet us what you think of the show or the next guest we should have on. If you are interested in watching podcasts instead of listening, all our episodes are available on our Lambgoat YouTube channel. So subscribe and make sure you get notified when new episodes are released. I would like to take a quick second to thank our Patreon supporters, Dylan and Lachlan. Thank you for supporting the Van Flip. You guys are awesome. If you would like to become a Patreon supporter too, not only would you help improve and grow the show, but you also get early access to episodes before they are released, an invite to the private Discord chat, some Lambgoat swag, and more. And heck, we'll even give you a shout out on the show for as long as you are a supporter. Visit patreon.com/thevanflip for more info. On this episode of the podcast, we have Raven and Thor of the Norwegian black metal band 1349. And shout out to their label, Season of the Mist, for giving us a couple vinyls to give away. Head over to our YouTube channel for a chance to win 1349's newest release, The Infernal Pathway, as well as their 10-inch single, Dog Scam.
Oh yeah, what's this? I feel this. Oh yeah, this is Oh no! Lambgoat presents the Van Flip Podcast.
Yeah. Try not to drown, you know?
All right, well, welcome back to the Van Flip Podcast here. Today's guest is Raven and Thor from the Norwegian black metal band, 1349. I was dyslexic there, right there. 1349. You guys just had a new album come out last week on the 18th. Great. It's your 7th studio album. Mm-hmm. How has that been received?
Very well. And all the reviews have been fantastic. A lot of good press. Season of Mist really came through on everything and did their part of the job. And it's nothing to complain about so far. And 1 week in, it's looking good. So
yeah, you guys, like I said, it's your seventh release over the years. You guys have done this whole band thing for over 20 years almost. You kind of actually started doing vocals, but then switched to drums. Were you doing drums and vocals at the same time?
I did both, yeah, in the beginning, yeah.
And like, were you playing live like that as well?
No, we never got to that point, but it was always the intention to have a session drummer for live situations. But right. On rehearsals, I did both, yeah.
I was curious to that, because when I read about that, I was thinking, like, that's never probably been done in black metal in general on the live show, so...
Well,
Abzu, of course, Abzu has a drummer that sings, and there's other bands too. Of course, none jump into my mind immediately, but Abzu, yeah, from Texas.
Yeah,
okay,
Abzu from Texas.
Yeah,
drummer.
So it is done. It's done, but it's like been very done. Rare, you know. Yeah. It just seems like it would be a lot to do. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, the reason for me to originally have a session drummer was then to be a frontman, basically, or to have the interaction with the audience, which is, it always helps on the performance and how the band looks live, you know. And yeah, if the drummer is hidden behind a drum kit, so either you need to push the drum kit forward. That was never an option. So after a couple of years, we shared rehearsal rooms at a rehearsal room with the Satyricon at the time. And Frost is a friend of mine, and he heard some of the new material, and he said that, well, if we needed a permanent drummer, he was happy to join. So mm-hmm.
And he still kind of does both band, both projects still,
he does,
right?
Both, yeah. Yeah. So that's it's the easiest job and easiest decision I had to make ever. I just fired myself as a drummer and hired Frost. So.
Well, at least there's no hard feelings there.
No, I can't. Well, I, not that I talk about much.
Right. Right. And Tor, you're in another band as well. Pantheon One or?
Here's the thing. I it's true that I am in other bands, but Pantheon I disappeared in 2010.
Hmm.
That band is officially dead, I think. It's just that no one has told the internet.
Oh, well. Well, now we are, you know.
I have my own band called Svart Lotus, which I play guitars and sing. And I do bass for an old Norwegian band called Mortem,
mm-hmm.
with some dudes that are a bit older than me. Yeah. But Pantheon I is dead. I think it's probably good that I say this to the internet, that Pantheon I is gone. I haven't done shit with that band for
Stop bringing
years.
It up, right?
Yeah, exactly. If you want to talk about other shit, I do talk about Svart Lotus.
Is it tough juggling multiple, like, multiple people in your band that have multiple, you know, outlets as far as their music goes?
Well, yes, it's always the logistics around it. It yeah. can be challenging, but...
And are all the projects like in a different avenue of metal or different genre of music altogether? Are they all are they similar in any way?
There's no point in doing similar stuff. I mean, yeah. When if a band that sounded more or less like 1349 say, "Hey, you want to play with us?" Like, no, I have 1349. I don't need a clone. That's boring. Svart Lotus is totally different expression of. It's still metal, of course, because I am damaged by what I am.
Right.
But I don't want to do the same thing. If I write music that sounds this is great for 1349, then that'll be a 1349. I won't give it to something else.
So you do come up with ideas in your head that are for specific.
For instance, with Svart Lotus, I have this magical BPM border. Okay, if it's faster than this, 1349 takes it.
Okay,
but that's just how it is. But I don't want to do same thing. I need to be able to express something, which is hard for me when I'm speaking into microphone. But
putting on the spot is rough. Yeah, I get it.
But music for me is very much an expression of who and what I am, and to do it, it must give me something, and it must be special, it must be unique, and it must be something that I feel is an extension of me. 1349 has been a part of my life for the last 20 year plus years, and is a very, very specific expression of me and what I am, and that's why I have the Seidemann persona to do that stuff, because mm-hmm. it's fucking extreme. Mm-hmm. Other bands, I do different expressions, and I can be me in a way.
Nice.
It's a difficult concept to explain.
I understand. Yeah, you have different sides of you that you want to share with different projects. So the Infernal Pathway just came out, and I did see a lot of reviews for it on YouTube and other things like that. It looks like a lot of people are really enjoying that album, and you did have a lot of success within the same, you know, group of people with your last album. What do you think is more drawing to the current release than your previous releases?
Well, the thing with the Infernal Pathway was that since it was our seventh album, we set out to take it to a whole new level when it comes to exploring the occult. And since like seven is the most occult number you can get, it was pretty obvious that that was the right direction to go. So we changed up the lyrical theme, and it's basically, it became obvious after all the lyrics were recorded and the album was going into the mixing process. And he came and come to the studio and he read the lyrics, and it's like he said, there's one common denominator here in everything. And it's one word that sticks with me, and that is the abyss.
Mm.
And that whole process kind of was a subconscious process. It wasn't something that we set out to do. But this album basically grew out of us in a more natural way. And this was also the thing with Massive, that it felt very natural when we made that. There were like no obstacles, and like sometimes when you make an album, you have to like work really hard on things to figure it out. But here, like, the pieces kind of fall more in place. That could be, of course, and it also is a part of it, is all the experience that you have over the years. But it's something about the feeling that you get when you're in the studio. You kind of, you know that it's right and it's spot on, the music. And like, when, especially when I do vocals, I feel it immediately when it's like, when it's right, this is how it should be. And I know, like, when I hear this song, I can feel the vocal patterns, how I want to lay out the vocals. And all of these processes with the album in general was very fluid and organic and natural, and it laid out very easily, to put it in a blunt way. But
yeah,
it was good. Felt good to make it, basically.
Yeah, well, that's good. Obviously, if it comes naturally and it's easy and you're proud of it, then it's probably gonna come out.
But it also helps to have. We brought in Jared Pritchard again, that worked with us on Massive, on Chaos. And of course, he's a technical wizard. doesn't have any limitation when it comes to that. So any demands or any questions that we had, he's able to pull it off. And to have him in the process, being there all the time, and I don't have to be there all the time and produce the albums full time, which we used to. Just that relief, you can like take the step back and see it from a distance.
And focus on other things in general. So
that, and then the solutions come in much quicker than if you're stuck in a studio through the whole process. You get, you can get a narrow vision on things.
Yeah, like cabin fever, or you get very short-sighted about things, for sure.
Yeah, and that will make the mixing process much harder, and so it adds up. But to bring in a professional like you, it is has helped a lot. And also, I think that he understands. He also does us live, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So to kind of, he knows how the band works in a live situation, and he can utilize that also in the studio, so you get some more organic feeling, basically.
And as far as mixing goes, how hands-on are you in this last album? Because, like you said, you were doing a lot of your own engineering in the early days. So, you know, are you very, like, perfectionistic when it comes to, like, how the album sounds and the, you know, like, afterwards and everything is said and done? Like, how crazy can you get nitpicking, like, mixing and stuff like that?
Well, it could be crazy, you know. I mean, like, the hardest album I ever mixed was Hellfire. And when it was done, I couldn't listen to it for a month, you know. And when I started listening to it again, then I realized that I had to mix it once more.
Mm.
Because there was, like, things that I wanted to change. But after that was done, then I was happy with it. And
are you ever, like, fully happy with how something sounds? Or do you always, like, years later go and listen? Because obviously your skills grow big. You get better skills and you're better ear.
No, you have to draw a line. And that's kind of what the first thing you learn when you record albums is that you just have to make a decision and stick with it. Mm-hmm. At some point you have to just draw a line. Otherwise you will never be finished. You know, you can work on an album for 20 years.
Yep.
And that's, some people do that, but it's not very... not very economic, and
not economic.
And if you want to tour, it's good to get an album up as well, so you have something to tour on.
Yeah. So you guys, did you record this in Oslo or in Norway and over there? One of the cool things, or I guess one of the interesting things that's happened with this particular album, you announced, or you released a song earlier this year. I'm gonna like butcher the way you say it. Dotscamp?
It's close. Dotscamp.
Okay. There's like a, you know, a different letter in there that I don't know how to pronounce. So, yeah, the O with the line through it. Yeah. So the Norwegian government kind of approached you guys about writing a song, you know, to one of the paintings of, is it Munch? Monk?
Edvard Munch, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so you guys basically, you just went through the catalog of imagery and decided which one that you wanted to? And then does that also come into like the occult kind of feel? Because the painting that you picked obviously gives it a little grim. It's like a kind of a grim painting altogether, you know?
Yeah, well, it's that whole project was...
Yeah, how did that even start? And...
It's called Monk Plus Music, and it was... They chose four very different artists to interpret a monk painting of their own choosing. And they wanted us to be the more extreme side of it. And first we declined it because we didn't have time to do it. But then they came back after a couple of days and they said that. So what would it take? What would the timeline be?
Mm-hmm.
What can you work with? And then we felt that we were kind of trapped and we had to
yeah.
we had to accept. And then we started working on it. Or basically our guitar player started working on it because he was the one that... First of all, he's a huge fan of Edvard Munch. And then being the main composer as well, he spearheaded that whole project. And the song that came out of it was spectacular. And we played it to Season of Mist. They didn't know about this either. So suddenly just contact them and said, so we're doing this project. Mm-hmm. They're like, what? And then they listened to it and it's like, so we want to do this as a hard copy as well. And so basically just that's where it
came. Because I came onto the album.
Yeah. Yeah. And then when the song was done and as more songs developed for the album, because we were basically in the middle of the process of writing the album when this request came. And that's why we kind of declined it.
Yeah.
That and a couple of other, for us was on tour and there were different stuff going on. But when the song was done and the other songs started to be ready for the album, it became very clear that Dutch Camp had to be included in the album because it fitted in
mm-hmm.
in the whole. It basically just fitted in the album. It was a part of the album.
Interesting.
So we re-recorded it for the album. So that's
Did a whole new recording.
That's a different version. We were trying, the original idea was to have Norwegian lyrics on it, but I wasn't happy with the lyrics.
Did the original recording have Norwegian lyrics on it?
No, that has English lyrics as well,
okay.
as this album version. But in the studio, we had time to sit down, and we rewrote some Norwegian lyrics for it as well. So we made... one version with Norwegian lyrics as well, so that is included on in the special box edition,
right?
As a bonus track.
Cool. Yeah, you can also release like a B-side vinyl or something like that too with that.
Yeah, so basically you have like three different versions of that song now.
The first recording, the second recording,
and then a Norwegian.
Norwegian version. Do you guys normally write your lyrics in English or? Was that something that you kind of adapted to, or is that something that's from the get-go?
From the get-go, yeah.
Is that something that's prevalent in Norway as far as like with extreme metal and black metal? Do a lot of the bands write in their native tongue, or do they try to write in in English or whatnot?
Well, both. The thing is that for us, we quickly realized that Norway was never going to be our market, really. I mean, black metal isn't huge. Well, it's not huge anywhere, but particularly not in Norway. So to kind of get heard and to go beyond Norway, we should write in English. And I was always comfortable expressing myself in English, particularly in writing. I mean, I fucking hate speaking it, but because of my ridiculous accent. But I was always very comfortable with written English. So it wasn't until... When the fuck did I write something in Norwegian for 1349?
Dutch Camp? Yeah, it was the Dutch
Camp. Yeah, I guess that's the first...
Because Psalm 777 is Destroyers.
Yeah, right. So yeah, Dutch Camp was then actually the first lyric I wrote for 1349 in Norwegian.
Took 20 years.
Yeah.
Hey, we got it out, though.
Yeah, well.
It's a thing as well, is that it's much easier to sing
So the rhythm is
yeah, the cadences and everything
to fit with the English text than with Norwegian.
Yeah, I could see that. You guys do a lot of touring over the last 20 plus years. Do you find it easier to tour on that side of the globe comparatively to the Americas in general?
Well, the US is where we tour the most. This will be our 13th North American tour.
So. Yeah, you guys are always over here, I see.
So we toured way more over here than we have in Europe, actually. So there are no four tours?
No, it's
more, but...
You sure? Five, maybe? But, we did the first one with Red Harvest. Then two Gorgoroth tours.
Mm-hmm.
And then we did
2014.
Yes. Yeah, that's four.
Then some UK tours.
Yeah, the one with the Goat the Head.
Mm-hmm.
That's one.
Do you play the festival circuit and everything out there?
Yeah. You have all the festivals. So basically, if you reach out to, you play one festival, you reach out to 50,000-60,000 people.
Yeah.
So
it's a lot of people at one time for sure.
So you don't have to. It's not until recent years that the festival market is starting to pick up in the US as well.
Yeah.
More like that it is in Europe.
Yeah, it's always been kind of a big thing out in Europe as far as the festival circuit is concerned. Do you enjoy playing those bigger shows like that, or do you prefer playing more intimate situations?
It swings both ways. It's sometimes if it's... it basically boils down to the working conditions and the spot you play and everything.
Do you because I watched a couple of your interviews recently this week, and there's a couple times where you've been in festivals that are outdoor, that are more outdoor set in nature, so to speak. Do you find that that's a better venue for your band's music rather than a club or...
For me, it doesn't matter. It's you're on a stage regardless, and the equipment that are on stage is basically the same.
Mm-hmm.
And the surroundings are mostly drunk people, and so there's not much that changes actually. It's how many people that you're able to reach at the same time, and you have with the club concert, you have the audience much closer, and. Some of these festivals, it could be 20 feet to the audience.
Right, right.
So, even you can't look them in the eyes. That you
it's a little
club,
different.
And if I had to choose, I would probably choose a club concert because it's more intimate and something about that that connection that you get with the audience makes it special, and that's also why. Why you want to tour, you want to meet your fans face to face, and that's a huge part of it. You want to present your art to the fans, and then to look them in the eyes while you perform it
is
a rewarding situation as well.
Right. Have you ever thought about moving over here since you guys tour all the time?
No, thank you. I'm very comfortable in Norway, so
I understand. Well, if someone's paying for you to come over and whatnot, obviously, sort of a free vacation, not necessarily a free vacation because there's a lot of work involved. But
it's hard work,
How, do you guys have any issues getting visas or anything like that?
No, it's been a couple of times that they've been. The process has been delayed a little bit because you never know when you deliver the visa papers. It's basically basically you take all the papers and you throw it up in the air and you don't know how it's going to land.
Right. How long does the process usually take? How long do you guys start working on it before a tour?
Oh, 6 months.
Wow.
Yeah. And then, but the process from when you file the papers till you get an answer can be anything from 3 months to 15 days.
Hmm.
So basically you don't know that either.
So basically, like, your, you know, your government moves about as fast as our government does, you know? They don't really rush anything.
No, we only deal with your government.
Oh, okay, okay.
Yeah, no, we don't have to do anything with ours. Right. They don't care where we go.
So. Well, then, yes, for sure. They definitely like to drag their feet on those, that kind of things. Like, very bureaucratic.
Well, I don't mind. I can tolerate all the paperwork process, even though any type of paperwork I find extremely boring, but it's the amount of money that it costs that's mm-hmm. starting to become the biggest issue. You know, it's like it's more than $3,000 to get visas for us, you know.
Per person or all together?
No, that's all together. And so it's more than $3,000 now.
Mm.
And then you need to fly over here, and I mean,
that's costly as well. Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of costs that go involved with that.
Yeah, it's always something. But I have to say that after your new administration came in, the visa process has been faster.
Really?
I don't know if that has something to do with it, but
interesting. It is interesting.
I guess people thought the opposite.
Yeah. But we also come, I mean, you know, and again, you're coming from like a Scandinavian country, which is basically kind of like, you know, we don't have that many issues with you guys there. So that could be it too.
No, that's one thing. Another thing is that it's also, we've been there before.
Yeah.
I'd say this is our 13th tour.
So. Yeah, yeah. It seems like you guys have, after 10 punches, you get, you know, a free visa in the mail or something like that after 10 times.
Yeah, they can get the same as coffee shops. Yeah, it would be nice.
Yeah, yeah. So Raven, you kind of claim that your base for like your motivation to be in a band and like your principle for writing like extreme metal, black metal, or whatever was a band, Mayhem, and then Celtic Frost were two of your big influences.
Well, Celtic
in the early days, I should say,
and Hellhammer are obviously a couple of big influences, but there are several, but. The band that really sparked and gave me the name black metal was Burzum.
Mm.
First time I heard that, because that music was labeled black metal, and that when I heard that music was like, this is the type of music that I've been looking for. I was a huge Slayer fan, and that Slayer was pretty much the perfect band. But then I heard Burzum, so this is even more extreme.
Right.
This is perfect. Can be this way, and then. Then I was just happy being a black metal fan, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Just a fan of the genre and all the other bands that started around the same time, you know. Mayhem had already been out, so I discovered them. And Dark Throne was there, Emperor, obviously, Immortal, and Slayer, and of course, Thorns.
Yeah.
But towards the later half of the 90s, the whole black metal era turned into more orchestrated and
like operatic, like different instruments and stuff.
No, it's just basically it's like synthesizers playing an orchestra, and it's the dress code became more of a goth theme,
mm-hmm.
and they still called it black metal, and it didn't give me that that same feeling that I had first time I heard Burzum. That was labeled black metal to me. And that's when I decided to form 1349. To make black metal the way I wanted it to be. And mm-hmm. I found people that shared that same vision. And we never looked back, you know.
Yeah.
We were just focused on making our own black metal. So, and keeping that old flame alive, and that feeling that we felt that the first time we heard a black metal band.
Yeah.
And go from there on and discover and evolve both our music and as musicians, basically. And
interesting.
That's been the term for it. And people always ask also that it's been a steady lineup for so many years. And I say that this can be probably one of the reasons. It's not a band formed by friends to have fun. It's a band formed by individuals that share the same vision.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
And
that's probably a good note for a younger audience to, you know, catch on to. Because if you do start a band with friends, there are times where it can, you know, kind of grow apart and have issues. Yeah. But if you all share the common, you know, vision.
It's also it, at some point, if you're going to do something with the band, money will be involved at some point. And then money between friends can also be an issue.
Alex actually had a question about money in black metal and everything like that. He was wondering, like, do you guys have other jobs back home, or is this basically like your full-time gig? Yeah, because like we said, doesn't seem to be a lot of money floating around in hard music in general for the most part, let alone like a niche market.
No, well, it's a subgenre, and the money is not why you start playing black metal, basically. It's, well, it could be, but I don't know what what country you should live in.
Yeah, exactly.
Norway is a pretty expensive country to begin with, so no, you have to have some other incomes in order to make ends meet. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And just happy that we're able to have to get the deal, you know, so that we can release our music and we have fans that buy it, so we were able to maintain and sustain as a band. Mm-hmm. And a band is nothing without their fans, basically.
That's for sure. What about that part of the world attracts a lot of people that like extreme metal, as far as, like, it just seems like all the Scandinavian areas love, like, black metal and extreme metal and dark metal and stuff like that. Why is that?
Well, the thing is that it might seem like that, but take, for instance, Norway. It's not like there's a million black metal bands in Norway, but there's 10 guys who play in 500 different bands. I don't really know what it is about Scandinavia. I mean, Finland has the highest density of metal bands per capita, wherever, how it is.
Per capita?
Yeah, I think. Mm-hmm. Finland, then Sweden, then Norway, then Iceland. I don't know about Denmark, really. But
they only have Volbeat.
Well, they have King Diamond. Well, no, he's American. He lives here now.
He lives in Dallas.
Okay, well, then they only have that. But, I mean, technically speaking, there's not a lot of hardship for the Scandinavians. We mostly do okay. There's not a lot of war. There's not a lot of famine. We get bored, and we live in places where it's dark most of the year.
Yeah.
Summers are short. Winters are long. And we live close to nature, many of us at least live close to nature, and I believe that nature is the key thing when it comes to black metal. This feeling that you get from nature, and when the first time I heard, well, Bursu, there was this image in my head of a forest in the winter,
mm-hmm.
right? This majestic, if you will, nature mysticism, sort of, which is really fucking weird to speak of when you live in a very secular country, right? But people also gotta understand that back in the 80s, 90s, there were two countries in the world that had a Christian, or not a Christian, but a religious leader as the leader of the country.
Mm-hmm.
That one would be Iran, as everyone knows, and then it was Norway. You had a priest as a prime minister for quite a while.
It definitely gives, like, that's when I think in my head, the imagery of, like, black metal, extreme metal, it definitely is very nature-oriented, a lot of snow, too. So I kind of, you know, get that whole vibe. Not particularly for your band by itself, but what there seems to be a lot of, like, face paint and whatnot going on with a lot of, like, metal acts and stuff like that. Where does that kind of come from? Is that kind of, like, in the culture over there, or is it something that you just, I don't know, maybe saw Kiss one day and, you know, that was cool? Or, like, how does that imagery play into the band itself, or the music, per se?
Well, I think in black metal, a lot of the early guys loved Kiss. I mean, everyone I speak to who's some years older than me, they all seem to love Kiss.
Yeah, I think everyone.
Yeah. And of course, there are others in music history who has used corpse paint, I would say, to great effect. Arthur Brown and the Crazy World. You did the whole corpse paint and the God of Hellfire stuff. Screaming Jay Hawkins did a lot of theatrics. It's theatrics, but I can only kind of speak for myself, I guess. But the paint was a part of the kind of black metal tradition that we wanted to keep with 1349. And for me, as a performer, when you're going to do something that's very extreme and demanding, and you're kind of purifying a part of yourself in a way. I think purifying is the wrong word here. Distill, maybe, I don't know. I'll get around to it. I need time so I can go up on stage and do this force that 1349 is, and then I need the paint to kind of...
It's a ritual, basically.
Yeah, ritualize, basically, and put on your war paint and go to war. There's an almost spiritual dimension to it in a way, because you use it to focus and to get ready to go out there and do proper black metal. I don't really have a good way to explain
it. Yeah, so you're basically just kind of keeping the vibe alive with the, you know, with the early bands that came before you, and just like you said, your vision of keeping it.
Yeah, legit. But it's also. Also, as I said, it's the preparation for a show, and it's put on the paint. It's just like a ritual, and this has come from many cultures.
Yeah, like going to war, like you said it, or Thor said it. Yeah, it's definitely like going to battle, you know.
Yeah, so you put on your war face.
How long does that take you?
Depends on how much time you have, but. like 20 minutes is it's a good time, then you can do it properly. It's,
interesting.
It can be done in shorter time as well, but...
Won't look as good?
No, but it's something you like to take your time with it, you know, since it has this ritualistic feeling. And then it's good to sit down and you focus on the mirror and you put on the paint and you get into the zone, and that's...
Yeah, I can get that. I can see that. Yeah. Just kind of losing yourself within, you know, applying your war paint. And then, again, you have to psych yourself up to get ready for battle. So it's basically like psyching yourself up to get on stage and, you know, rock out. Like,
if you spend some time just stare at yourself in front of a mirror, regardless of paint or anything, it's like something happens, you know, and your mind starts...
You tap into something completely different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's weird, but it works.
Well, yeah, it does work for, again, that style of metal and everything like that. It doesn't look like off the wall, so to speak. Like when bands do it or other artists do it, sometimes it does look disingenuous. But I think with the history that it has in black metal and whatnot, that it just comes across like, this is how it's supposed to be, you know.
And it's also, black metal is a very, at least to me, a very primal, emotional state. And you kind of, you tap into your primal instincts. And to go into a, so to speak, a black and white mode, it's clean edges.
Yeah, and it makes it a little easier just to...
There you are.
Over the years, you've toured with many artists. Among others, you've toured with Origin, Suffocation, and Cannibal Corpse. Which of those three bands is the best death metal band in your opinion?
Origin. No one can come close to those.
Yeah,
those dudes. They're just ridiculous. So good.
These are all the questions that I've been sent in, so I'm trying to read through them. Some of them we've already talked about just unknowingly. So Alex asked about why there's so much black metal out there, and are things that depressing over there? But obviously we already tapped into that. You were mentioning earlier you found Slayer. I had a question about like how did that part of the world find like black or metal in general, and then how easy was it for you guys to just kind of like share and find new bands at a time where like the internet really wasn't prevalent, so to speak. You know, everyone, at least here, was doing the tapes in the 80s and 90s and everything like that. I'm sure you guys were doing that too over there. Was it hard for you guys to get American metal or American, you know, bands over there? For that subculture, I should say, not necessarily like mainstream rock, but...
You had to do some digging, basically, to find the more underground extreme stuff, but it was a lot of tape trading. I mean, you could find easily all the mainstream shit, of course, and some of the older... like Slayer, and that you could find that easily. I mean, Metallica was on the radio, right? So
yeah,
you could get stuff that was similar to that. But a lot of the kind of underground black metal stuff spread by tape trading.
Was it more local, like bands from Europe, or was it a mix of, you know, everywhere?
It's a mix, yeah, of course. And if you like one, if you wanted to really explore, you had to go to Oslo, to the capital, and there were like special shops there that you could find that were like importing all sorts of weird stuff, like for instance Euronymous did with his store, you
know, right? Helvet. It's like a more of a niche kind of market for that. Yeah,
you had all these niche stores that for every subgenre, basically. And of course, there wasn't that many subgenres at that time either.
Right.
So it was a metal store, and it had like all types of metal. And then you can find like the harder type of metal.
Is that something that's still prevalent over there, or with like the internet, is it kind of...
Well, there's a fantastic used metal store in Oslo that actually holds place in the old location that Helvete was.
Interesting.
It's called Nosebleed Records.
Nesebro.
And there's so much stuff. He basically has everything.
Get lost for days in there.
Yeah. You can spend a week in there and still he has stuff other places.
Mm-hmm.
It's just crazy.
How do you think, like in the last 20 years, like how do you think everything's changed as far as like within the metal... the metal genre, as far as like, you know, getting discovered or trading tapes or doing all that, like with the birth of the internet and the ability for like you to easily connect with someone halfway across the world instantly, rather than, you know, one day maybe your tape might get, you know, around the world. Like, do you guys think it's easier nowadays, or do you wish maybe you were kind of like born in this time frame as far as that's concerned?
It swings both ways. It's I mean, the big record labels, they lost a bit of their power, but it seems that they gained it back somehow.
Yeah.
But before it was... I think the best thing about how it used to be was that the record labels decided which band that was going to be out there. And then all of them could play. They were good musicians. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, they wouldn't come out there. And so they kind of kept that higher musicianship quality. If you wanted to be a musician, then you really, really had to work really hard for it.
Yeah.
To be signed, basically.
Right. To make the cut.
Yeah. But then, of course, you had like the smaller labels and stuff, the indie labels that did the more loose type of genres.
Right.
So
weren't worried about making as much money.
Yeah. But they tried more from the internet, I guess. So the balance was more equalized with that type. And, of course, the promotional value. But it also opened up for anyone with a computer and some skills to make their own band and flood the market.
Right.
So it's much, much harder to get out there because everybody's pumping everything all the time.
Putting whatever they want out there.
Yeah, and you want to find a new band. That whole thing of finding a band and discover a new band, like that joy when you went through the record store and you
you went and listened to either an LP or a CD, you know, mm-hmm. and you're like, oh, this is good. And you found a new band in the catalog because it was distributed by the same label or...
had cool artwork.
Cool artwork, obviously, or it stood in the same genre as other bands that you like. That doesn't happen anymore.
Yeah, I was going to say, how do you find new bands? Or do you find new bands, like, on the road, at least? Or do you just...
If they come recommended by people that I trust, yeah, then I can listen. But then it's Spotify or Apple Music, you know. Or YouTube, you know, you find them online.
But in a way, though, too, like, if you leave it just up to that, there's a chance that the algorithm's only going to put, you know, whatever... you know, like bigger artists, obviously, within that subgenre, that's what they're going to pump to you, you know?
Yeah, because they paid for the placement.
Right. So speaking of like new bands or in general, what are like three American metal, it doesn't have to necessarily be black metal or anything like that, but what are like three metal bands that you guys, you know, are fond of yourself?
In the US?
Yeah, it could be current or older, obviously. Actually, if you want to do current and older, that'd be great. Because Slayer, we've already said Slayer, so obviously
you're going to say Slayer. Obviously, yeah, and I also like Exodus a lot.
Mm.
It's something, a band that it's fallen, that I think hasn't gotten that much, as much attention as they should have. I don't see why Exodus isn't... just as big as Slayer, basically, but I also know the industries. I know how things work.
Right.
But
not everything goes according to plan.
No, that's one thing. And you wanna?
Hey, I was gonna take the time to bring up. I guess they're not new anymore. The thing is, I don't really pay attention. Our engineer Jared Pritchard plays in a band called Pulchra Morte, which is fucking great. We toured with a bunch of kids called Black Crown Initiate, which plays a very modern form of metal that I can't really say I understand.
That was here in the States?
Yeah.
Or... Yep. Okay.
But those kids are fantastic. And musically, it's very, very interesting, even though it's modern and they have plenty of strings and it's complicated as shit. But yeah, I mean...
There's a lot of good bands out there. Bands we toured with.
Origin again.
Origin, yeah. That's just ridiculous, you know.
Yeah.
So what's the plan going forward for you guys? I mean, obviously you just came off of the release of the new album. Do you guys foresee yourself taking a little more time? Or I'm sorry, not as much time, because it was like five years between the last two albums,
pretty much to the day, 5 years. Yeah,
because sometimes you guys release an album like the next year or the next fall, you know, 2 years from there. It just seemed like you know, what's going forward for you guys as far as like plans.
Well, 1349 is a band that thrives from chaos, you know, so we can't tell, because the band decides by itself, basically.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a lot of chaos going on in the world in general, so you should have enough.
Well, we don't pay too much attention to the world in general.
It's also it's probably a good idea.
Yeah, it's, to read the news,
it's not
worth it.
How long do you guys, because you guys are, this is the first day of your tour.
First day to them.
How long do you guys plan on being here in the States?
Well, the tour ends in Atlanta on the 16th of November.
Okay.
It goes up on the East Coast into Canada, and then comes back down through the Midwest, and back out through Denver, down to Albuquerque, out to the West Coast, and then back through Texas.
Do you guys normally hit the same spots, or do you try to expand where you book your shows at?
The different tours always hit different markets.
Mm-hmm.
If we can... it's always about the routing, where you're going to go, and the time that you have available for a tour. That's also always an issue. So like this time around, the Pacific Northwest wasn't included due to time issues, obviously. So that that is something that we will include on the next rounds. We always do like different rounds and then go into Canada and like do more the northern parts. And but it's all you basically always go through some of the major markets like New York, Chicago.
Yeah, you have to hit those obviously.
Either San Francisco, Oakland, or LA, and it's in those areas you always go by, you know. And there's also some places, if you go to other places, there's also some places that you passed, and
right.
And then maybe you play some new places, but it's an art form even that, to put up a tour, you know, and then to hit the right markets and the right spots and find, and also to find the offers, you know.
Mm-hmm. How often are you able to come over? Is it once a year? Is it multiple times a year? And will it be more now that you, because you just released an album, obviously, so you're going to be playing that a lot.
It's when you release an album, we'll do, it also depends on how long the visa lasts.
Mm.
And so that is combined with other schedules and other tours, other places in the world. But we will hopefully be back one more round on this visa.
Cool.
But that will be next year sometime.
Well, you guys are just starting off your tour tonight, so that'll be fun. Do you guys have any other things that you want to say? Obviously, any bands you want to plug? You've done that, so any like last words for the...
No, I just hope that people enjoy the album and come out on tour, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And see you out there.
All right. Take it easy. Cool. Appreciate that, guys.
Thank you so much.
Oh, yeah, more than welcome. It went a little longer than usual, so...
Hello out there!
Yes, we're out there, everyone. I'm Hal Schwartz.
And I'm Flynn McClain. Together, we host None But the Brave, a podcast dedicated to the music and career of Bruce Springsteen.
Bruce and E Street Band are on tour right now for the first time in 6 years, and we're taking a detailed look at what's happening on stage in our bi-weekly episodes.
We've also been recently joined by some very exciting guests, including rock journalist Warren Zanes and Stephen Hayden, Backstreet's magazine founder Charles Cross, and Barstool's Kirk Menahan.
If you're a diehard Springsteen fan, this is the show for you.
So please subscribe to None But the Brave on your favorite podcasting platform, and we hope to see you further on up the road.
Thank you so much! We'll be seeing you!